Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you all here today. Happy to be with you all here this weekend. As you all know, well, maybe some of you don't know, maybe some of you didn't listen last week, and we had Jane Silken, the titular Silk from the Silk or Joe Show. And I did guest host the Alan Nathan Show last week, but I totally forgot to post about that on social media, so here we all are. You all totally missed me last week. Anyway, we want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for allowing this program to exist. We've been around, actually, it's had this name, Silk or Joe Show, now for 3 years. It's in its fourth year in this form. That transition just happened sometime in the last 3 or 4 weeks. I forgot the exact date because it wasn't, like, immediate. It was sort of over two shows it happened at the end of March of 2021. Anyway, we do want to thank the Salem Radio Network, though, for distributing this program as well. Regardless of what the name of the show has been, Salem Radio Network has been distributing it since 2013, November-ish, so we want to thank them. And for our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com, you can go up there, you can see the Silk or Joe Show, well, hear it, because it's a radio show, and you can also listen to previous editions of the program as well. And I do believe that something just went screwy with my... There it is. Yeah, I have my notes sitting up here, and there's a big old cat sitting in my lap, and he just kind of trampled on the keyboard, so I just lost all my notes for the show, which is terrific. But anyway, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com, if you want to listen to previous editions of the show without cat-related difficulties, you can find them on the podcast page there. And you can also listen to the Alan Nathan Show on there as well. You know, because I did guest host last week, and you can hear that. What was it, Wednesday, I think. Yeah, it was last Wednesday, I believe, that I had guest hosts. So the episode for the 10th. It's not too outdated by now, I don't think. Anyway, though, as far as what we're getting into on this show, some of it might seem outdated to you because, well, it's just retreading old ground. At least some of it is about... off he goes. Anyway, the cat just slept off my lap. Because you've all been hearing about District Attorney Alvin Bragg, all the prosecutions against Trump by now, it's so old hat, you know? Like, do something new, will ya? And everyone knows that it's political, but there's this new documentary out that I just saw a clip of earlier this week when I was trying to get a clip for the Alan Nathan Show. And this documentary, it's called Chasing Trump. It's by this group American Greatness, and I think it's a PAC or something. So this documentary, though, it follows District Attorney Alvin Bragg, right? And they're talking about how, oh, he's doing all this stuff to get Trump, making up charges. They bring in experts to say that they've brought in, that Alvin Bragg just invented basically 35 felony charges based on what was something that was actually perfectly legal activity. And then they play clips of people in the liberal media saying, this is a terrible case, what are you doing? And some of those clips are from a year ago. So, like I said, some of it is old news. And then they come out talking about, you know, people in New York City, how they're suffering now because of Alvin Bragg, how all this focus on Trump, Alvin Bragg is letting crimes go. Like, there's 10 repeat offenders that he isn't prosecuting that are guilty of over 500 crimes between the 10 of them, averaging to 50 each under Alvin Bragg's reign of terror alone. Administration was the word I was fishing for. So just 10 people alone under Alvin Bragg do 500 crimes under Alvin Bragg again. And he was only elected to attorney general like 2 years ago, right? 2022 is when he started. So you'd think that the people in New York City would be, at least in his area of it, would be a little irritated at that, right? Well, some of them are. Some of them are. There's this one person, for example, her son was killed, and she's complaining about, well, here's what she said, quote, I think it is absolutely politically motivated, referring to the Trump stuff by you, but the rest of the quote is, especially when Alvin Bragg is not prosecuting everyday crime that's happening here in New York City, where he is dropping murder and gang assault indictments against two of the people involved in my son's murder. If he would actually do his job and prosecute crime instead of wasting more of our tax dollars and more of the public's time going after Trump, maybe, just maybe, things can start to turn around. But here's the thing, though, that's not what citizens of New York City voted for him to do. He outright explained in his campaign, I'm just going to be in here to get Trump. I don't really care about crime at all. In fact, I think armed robbery is a misdemeanor offense. or it should be a misdemeanor offense. You know, you have to take a gun out, put it in someone's face, threaten to kill them unless they give you all their money, and of course their finger could slip and blow your brains out anyway, but that's just a misdemeanor, you know, that's nothing to worry about. The same Democrats who want to ban guns, the same Democrats in New York who have red flag laws to the point where if you buy ammunition, you could be reported as a risk to the society and lose your gun privileges. Gun rights, I should say. It's a privilege in New York State. It's not a right. It should be a right. Legally, it should be a right. The Constitution says it's right, but in New York State, it's a privilege. Anyway, so, and just buying ammo, you can lose your right to own a firearm in New York State. And yet, Alvin Bragg, the district attorney, thinks that it should be a misdemeanor to abuse a firearm to the point where you threaten someone's life just for the sake of stealing whatever they have that you want from them. And like I said, this was known to voters when they voted for him. They knew that's exactly what his stance on crime was. They should have been able to put two and two together and realize, hey, this guy who doesn't think armed robbery is a crime and promises to get Trump, this guy probably won't prosecute crimes and probably will just devote his office to getting Trump. Lo and behold, that's exactly what happens. It's to the point where New York State has issued reprimand, or was that Letitia James they issued the reprimand against? Anyway, yeah, no, it was Alvin Bragg that they issued the reprimand against because he's not prosecuting these other crimes. He's just spending all of his time going after Trump, and crime is getting out of control. You know, increases in crime in his district are huge, 50% in some instances, a lot more in others. So you'd think, again, this documentary, it's like trying to convince people that Alvin Bragg is a problem, but like it's talking to you as if it's going to convince anyone of anything. It's not. People opposed to Alvin Bragg knew full well going in that this is what he would do. People who support Alvin Bragg knew full well going in that's what he would do. So who are you convincing? What's the point of this documentary? I guess it's a nice place to organize all the facts about him together, but it's not actually going to change anyone's minds because everyone knew already what was happening. Democrats were okay with what was going on. They voted for it. They wanted it to happen. Republicans didn't want it to happen, but it's New York City. Republicans don't really matter in New York City. So it's a lot of to-do about this, but again, it should be totally expected, and the voters, they got what they voted for. They wanted high crime as long as Trump was prosecuted. They got high crime with Trump being prosecuted. They shouldn't be complaining. Anyone who voted for Alvin Bragg, whether you're robbed, raped, or murdered under him, and if they let off the people who did all that to you, you have no right to complain because you voted for this. You knew what he was going to do. He was not dishonest or lying about it. It was very clear from the get-go. This is how he would run the show, and you voted for it. Okay? You vote for the guy who says he's going to do stuff, then you complain when he does the stuff? No. But still, I'm pretty sure, though, most Democrats in the district, they actually are aware that this is what's happening, how things are being conducted, and have no problem with it. I mean, gee whiz, the Democrats are psychotic when it comes to this kind of stuff. Like, for example, there was a senator here, I've got it in a tab somewhere, mind you, and all right, so Senator Catherine Cortez Masto, she voted against the impeachment of Mayorkas, right? That happened days after one of her senior advisors was killed by an illegal alien, okay? So she didn't care that the border crisis is so bad that one of her senior advisors was murdered by an illegal immigrant. She doesn't want to do anything about that. She doesn't want to hold Mayorkas accountable for letting all this happen. Does not care. Thinks that it's racist or whatever to act. And that's just the course as far as most liberals go, it seems. Now, you hear it again and again. Some non-white person kills a liberal, and the liberal's family says, well, the victim wouldn't want the murderer to be prosecuted because they've already suffered enough for being whatever race they are in this racist country. Or, you know, victims of robbery or whatever from these people, they don't bother reporting it because they think that they're racist if they care about it. And gee whiz, there was someone who was carjacked a couple of years ago, in fact, and a liberal in, I think it was St. Louis, that was carjacked. And they reflexively called the police because that's what you do when people point a gun or a knife at you and say, give me your car, and kick you out of the car and steal it. But then they actually apologized for calling the police, withdrew their claim or whatever, because they didn't want to persecute these black people that stole their car and threatened their life. Okay, so liberals, they're a little bit suicidal when it comes to their well-being. So, of course, if they think Alvin Bragg is going to get Trump, they don't care that there's low crime. In fact, or they don't care that there's no criminal prosecutions. In fact, they want that. They don't. It seems liberals, you know, this is the abolish the police crowd. They really don't care about their own well-being or the well-being of society. They just want their political opponents in prison. But as far as actual criminals, nah, forget it. They don't want them in prison at all. Anyway, we'll have more Silker Joe Show coming up to you after this break, so stick with us.
Department of Transportation's Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, or FMCSA, is now accepting applications for 5 federal grant opportunities that enhance commercial motor vehicle safety. By investing in these projects, FMCSA envisions safer highways, reduced crashes, and a more secure transportation system. These grants will also make commercial vehicle driving safer and more efficient, while creating opportunities for our tribal communities, veterans and military families, and others within the trucking industry. Together, we can significantly reduce serious injuries and deaths on our nation's roadways. Prospective applicants are encouraged to learn more about these grant opportunities and how to apply at fmcsa.dot.gov/grants. Applications are due by April 19th. Those within our tribal communities are encouraged to submit applications for these grants. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration.
Easter and springtime are just around the corner, and I've got some great ideas. If you're looking for creative play, we've got the one count scribble scrubbies from Crayola, 2 washable markers, scrub brush. Kids can do it over and over again. Wash them off, clean slate, repeat play value. For a little bit of water play, check out the Hatchimals Alive Make a Splash play set. 2 exclusive characters. You're going to hatch them in the water in the tub that's included. Really fun, and you've got these 2 exclusive characters, a little bit of collectability there. For the Thomas and Friends paint delivery set, we've got a motorized train that's going to go around the track. He's going to get stuck on the bridge. It's going to knock some paint cans over, really engaging kids in that imaginative play. For fans of Gabby's Dollhouse, there's a brand new season out. This is the perfect party bus. It's going to bring the setting to life. We've got a little disco stage. Gabby and DJ Catnip are ready to rock. If you're looking to get kids up and moving, check out the kid-powered go-kart from Grazer. This is the Crazy Kart Shuffle, and it's super easy to use. 5 adjustments, so it's going to grow with your kid. You can head over to thegeniusofplay.org to learn more.
Remote work environments have given employees increased freedom and flexibility. With that comes a variety of security risks. With employees no longer tied to the office infrastructure, IT must securely manage remote employees' devices no matter where they are. A user's device can create an opportunity for hackers to breach an organization. That device must also easily connect users to IT resources so they can be productive. The Open Directory platform provider JumpCloud offers the solution for successful device management. JumpCloud VP Eric Brown.
With JumpCloud, you can manage your entire fleet, regardless of operating system or location, and create a scalable device management foundation. IT personnel can manage all types of devices from a single cloud console, and employees get to work on their preferred devices. JumpCloud helps you achieve compliance, monitor events, manage device data, enforce policies, patch machines, and more.
To learn more, visit jumpcloud.com.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to man, mano a mano.
Hey, Steve! It's now a good time?
No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Hey, or welcome back, I should say. We are now joined for this segment by Captain Morgan Lorette. He is a U.S. Army retired, and he is author of Guns, Girls, and Greed, I Was a Blackwater Mercenary in Iraq. Captain Lorette, appreciate you being on the show. How are you today?
Oh, thank you so much. I haven't been called Captain in so long. It threw me for a loop.
Yeah, well, it seems kind of reflexive to me when someone's retired. I still end up throwing their rank in there anyway, because it seems to be the most respectful way of addressing a veteran. To me, anyway.
I appreciate it.
Yep. So, your book here, Guns, Girls, and Greed, I Was a Blackwater Mercenary in Iraq, that's quite a mouthful for a title. That's a very eye-catching title, I will say. Tell us about it.
Yeah, well, I wanted to go with the alliteration, but if you ever wondered what Blackwater was doing in Iraq or Afghanistan in 2004, 2005, this is the book. There's a ton of stuff out there for Blackwater. You know, some say it's great, some say that it was terrible. This is a ground perspective on the boots on the ground perspective of what we did in Iraq and how we operated. So it's not for the faint of heart. It is an absolute wild ride with all the emotion and craziness of the day-to-day operations of Blackwater.
So how did you end up getting involved with Blackwater?
Oh, man, it was weird. I had a buddy that went to go work for him, and I had never planned to do it. And he got over there, and they called me up the next day and said, hey, your buddy says you're pretty good. Why don't you come out here and train for us? And if everything works out and you get through the training, we'll send you to Iraq, and you can go protect diplomats over there. And I thought, that sounds insane. And then they said, we'll pay you $500 a day with a 10% bonus. And I said, that sounds great.
All right. Well, I guess that's why it's a mercenary group right there. $500 a day, it's a pretty good fee. Did you have any idea going in, or had you done anything similar to this before?
I was prior service, and I went into the ground offensive in Iraq in 2003, but this was just a completely different animal because, 2004, the internet's kind of nascent. We didn't have any GPSs or any of the cool stuff we have now. So we just kind of went in there and we winged it. We had to figure out how to do this mission, what was going to be the right way to do the mission. The rules of engagement were very, very fuzzy. We had essentially one mission: get somebody important from point A to point B and get them back alive. And when you got a bunch of former Special Forces dudes coming in there, they just figure out how to get crap done.
Wow, it sounds pretty impressive. So, do you have any idea how it would go down now? Because you mentioned, the technology was primitive there. Do you think the stuff that we have today would have been a lot helpful?
It would have been a heck of a lot nicer. So the thing about Blackwater and private security is that you don't have any military support. It's just you and 12 guys. So if something happens, it's just you and them trying to figure out how to keep yourselves alive. With the military, if something happens, you call up Big Army and they can send out a quick response force, or they can send out helicopters. When it's just you, you have to take that into account. So the argument was always with us is what can you go home or go back to your little tiny bunk and sleep well at night? And if you can do that after doing a crazy day's worth of work, then you are probably doing it right.
So then was that one of the biggest differences that you noticed from Army service, just that total lack of support? If something went wrong, you're on your own.
Yeah, but on the positive side, it was big boy rules. Anybody that spent some time in the military, one of the phrases is hurry up and wait. You get there way too early, and then you wait, and you do something, and then you wait. With Blackwater was really show up, get your stuff on, grab your weapons, pick up your principal, the person you're protecting, and get on the road and get back. So it was, from that standpoint, the big boy rules, the lack of bureaucracy, it was so much better than any time I'd spent in the military. But it was also, there's a reason why you're getting paid $550 a day. And it's because you might die.
Yeah, it sounds like, even though, like you said, it's things move a lot faster, it just also sounds way more intense than regular military service would be, because if with things moving faster, you end up doing a lot more in a shorter time.
Oh, 100%. We were out, you know, doing 6 to 8 runs per day, whereas with the military, you might do one. So on the plus is that, hey, you're keeping yourself busy, idle hands in the devil's workshop. But on the other side, you're putting yourself in harm's way so much more often than we would have as military members. And that's really kind of what the book talks through, is like, what is the emotion and what is the like day-to-day operations and how do you feel as that person on the ground in comparison to, you know, what you've heard out there. Eric Prince has a book. Jeremy Scahill has a book. This is just, you know, if you want the ride where you're sitting right next to a person that's working for Blackwater, that's this book. You know, no political bent, no sitting there and saying, oh, well, we did this good or this bad. Like, the reader can decide all that. I just wanted to tell you how crazy and hilarious it was at any given moment.
Wow. So, like, was there a reason that you guys in Blackwater were getting all the missions as opposed to the military? Like, was it just, you know, private contractors, so they naturally you're easier to obtain than military support? Or was it just, like, rules in the military that prevented them from acting more often than they did?
No, so when we went into Iraq, we didn't want to be seen as occupiers. So as soon as we gave the government was given to Iraq, they couldn't have soldiers driving around diplomats all the time. And that's where Blackwater came in, is you had to have somebody to protect these people, and the State Department, the CIA, the DIA, the NSA, all those three-letter organizations didn't have anybody that has been trained in an active combat zone to be able to protect them to start rebuilding Iraq. So it was a completely different mission than the military. And in hindsight, kind of insane that we decided that somehow we were on a diplomatic mission instead of an active war zone when cars were blowing up. But that's way above my head. I didn't make those decisions. I just got on the ground, grabbed my rifle, and, you know, ran Baghdad as hard as I possibly could.
Well, you know, it's like what they were saying about the Korean War, at least on the episodes of MASH. You know, they call it a police action, but it sure looks like a war. You know, they call it a diplomatic mission, but it sure looks like a war to you.
Oh, no, that's accurate. It's almost like Catch-22 meets like Wolf of Wall Street for the book, because it's the funniest, most insane stuff that I've ever been around. And I think anybody that was there at the same time would agree. But at the same time, like, there's nobody that's regulating private military contractors the way that military is being regulated. So we just had to kind of figure it out on our own. And you call it a diplomatic mission, but anytime that you get an intel report that there's a car that wants to blow you up, it's hard to say, oh, we're here to win hearts and minds.
Hmm. So then why did you decide to write the book today? Well, actually, we have about a minute left. So why did you decide to write the book today as opposed to much more contemporary to your experience?
One, it's hilarious. And two, I got tired of hearing about how good or bad Blackwater was. And I just wanted to get the real story out. Like, this is the real deal, the real story. Take or leave it. But at least you'll understand what we did and how we did it, as opposed to, you know, hearing politicians and journalists and, you know, CEOs blather on about what happened and what didn't.
Mm-hmm. Now, where can we get a copy of the book?
Go on Amazon. It's on Audible also. If you want Jay Moore to read it to you, Jay Moore from Saturday Night Live and Jerry Maguire. But yeah, go pick it up today. It is a wild ride, but don't let your kids read it.
All right. Well, maybe unless they're considering a career in private security, but
yeah.
Morgan Lorette, appreciate you being on the Silker Joe Show today. And again, listeners, the book is titled Guns, Girls, and Greed, I Was a Blackwater Mercenary in Iraq, and the author's last name, Lerette. You can go check that out. We'll have more Silker Joe Show after this break.
The Department of Transportation's Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration is now accepting applications for 5 federal grant opportunities that enhance commercial motor vehicle safety. I'm Patrick D. Niemans with the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, or FMCSA. Last year, more than $125 million in grant-funded initiatives were awarded to promote access to commercial driver's license programs, prevent human trafficking within the industry, conduct commercial motor vehicle safety-related activities, deploy innovative technology efforts, advance transportation safety research, and more. Together, we can significantly reduce serious injuries and deaths on our nation's roadways.
Prospective applicants are encouraged to learn more about these federal grant opportunities and how to apply at fmcsa.dot.gov/grants. Applications are due by April 19th. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation's Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration.
Calling all accredited institutions of higher education. Federal grant funding may be within your reach. I'm Evangela Hollowell with the U.S. Department of Transportation's Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration and a proud Hampton University alum. FMCSA offers a CMV Operator Safety Training Grant to educational institutions with opportunities to expand the number of commercial driver's license holders possessing enhanced operator safety training. This grant assists historically Black colleges and universities and minority-serving institutions. It also helps future alum like me get involved with the commercial motor vehicle industry. Prospective institutions with accreditation recognized by the U.S. Department of Education are encouraged to visit fmcsa.dot.gov/grants to explore the funding opportunity and learn how to start the application process. Together, we can significantly reduce serious injuries and deaths on our nation's highways. Sponsored by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration.
The open directory platform provider JumpCloud recently surveyed international IT decision makers. Not surprisingly, one of the topics that was top of mind was AI. Most IT professionals see AI as a positive. However, many are concerned with its implications on security. Most respondents said that AI is outpacing their organization's ability to protect against threats. JumpCloud offers the solution to help manage potential security threats posed by AI. JumpCloud VP Eric Brown.
It's important to be aware of AI's possible security implications so you can take precautions to use these tools safely. JumpCloud offers security without the complexity. We give admins the tools to help users follow best practices, defend against common attack vectors, and eliminate the sprawl of accounts and passwords that can lead to risky access and data breaches.
To learn more about how JumpCloud can help protect your organization, visit jumpcloud.com.
I was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when it happened. There was a sudden jolt and our submarine crashed on the seafloor. We were in total darkness.
That's Dr. Dejana Figueroa, a marine biologist and STEM teacher, talking about a deep sea dive she'll never forget.
It's funny. When I was a kid, I was afraid of the ocean. And there I was, 2 miles below the surface. But as a scientist, you prepare for that. Using our training and a little creativity, we fixed the sub and finished our experiments. The dive was just too important. Every dive gives us glimpses at things few people ever get to see. Glowing creatures, fiery undersea volcanoes. When we got back to the surface, I kissed the ground and called my mom, of course. But you know what? I wouldn't trade that dive for anything.
Dr. Figueroa uses her passion for STEM to discover new things and make the world a better place. She can STEM, so can you. Check out She Can STEM for more stories and inspiration. A message from the Ad Council.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm gonna keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times? When we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while. Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Look, we are in unprecedented times, okay? We're in dangerous times, as has been articulated here, around the world, and here at home. We need steady leadership. We need steady hands at the wheel. I regard myself as a wartime speaker. I mean, in a literal sense, we are.
Show everybody. What you just heard was a quote from House Speaker Mike Johnson. Republican out of Louisiana. He was saying that America needs steady leadership because apparently he's a wartime House Speaker. And as he said, we are literally at war. I would hesitate to use that term. Who are we at war with right now? I mean, we shot down some things from Iran, but that's about it. We were defending Israel. We aren't actually involved in that conflict, really. And as far as Ukraine goes, we're sending money to them, but we're not sending soldiers. I mean, we're no more at war now than, say, 1940, America was at war with Germany and Japan. We weren't. We were supplying people, but we weren't at war. Otherwise, the Nazis would have been torpedoing our convoys much earlier than they actually did. So I'm not sure where he's getting this "we are literally at war" thing. And now he might be personally at war, though, because he's in a very precarious position right now after he caved in on giving Joe Biden everything he wanted for funding Ukraine and not getting any funding for our own border security, for example. That seems to have gotten some members of the Republican Party a little upset at him. Now, he does make a good point, though, in a statement to CNN that America is very divided. Being House Speaker is pretty much impossible right now. He says, arguably, we've been more divided since the Civil War. Well, actually, no, that wasn't him making the point. He was quoting Newt Gingrich, who made that point. But now to say that he's a wartime House Speaker, that's going a little too far beyond what Newt Gingrich was saying. But certainly Newt Gingrich is right about how divided we are. But still, that doesn't mean the House Speaker just caves in whenever the Democrats want something. And Joe Biden himself said this, me personally, just as an aside, I didn't ever thought really that the money we were giving to Ukraine that we'd ever see it again, unless, you know, it was like in the form of politicians getting rich, in which case, yeah, because Ukraine is a big money laundering operation for our political elite. But as far as actual getting the loans repaid, I never thought that would happen. I didn't even think they were loans. I thought we were just giving money. But Joe Biden the other day came out and said these were actually loans, but we would forgive them. So he came out and verified what I thought all along, I guess. I may have been mistaken in my thought that they weren't loans for the past 2 years, but Joe Biden just came out and said that I was actually right that they weren't loans. So now House Speaker Mike Johnson just helped Democrats push through even more of that mess that we're never going to see a cent of, except again in the form of campaign contributions to Democrats from mysterious overseas sources or fattening their bank accounts via proxies, like, say, Hunter Biden, for example, was being used as. Anyway, so you can see why Mike Johnson is in a little bit of hot water there for caving into corruption and wasting American taxpayer money, because reckless spending like this is one of the reasons why we have inflation as a problem. Now, granted, if he's playing 4D chess here and he's thinking, okay, I'll give Democrats what they want by giving them all this spending because that will trigger inflation so that by the election we're hurting even more because of inflation and interest rates. Because the Federal Reserve right now, they're keeping interest, they haven't raised interest rates. They're not looking like they're going to, at least for the election year maybe. And if they did, that'd be an issue. But that people would feel, you know, you go to get a home loan, credit card loan, or interest rates on your credit card or whatever, you'd see it, start seeing it, it'd start really eating away at you. Perhaps more readily identifiable and blamable to the Federal Reserve than inflation is to the Biden administration, as far as identifiable anyway, because you know prices have gone up, but if prices suddenly went up a little bit more than they already have been, would you really notice? Would you really notice if the rate of increase was 1 cent more than it has already been? Not really. You just notice higher prices, but you've been noticing that for 3 years. So maybe Mike Johnson is thinking that if we do this, it'll force the Federal Reserve to do the thing with the interest rates that will raise them and kind of ruin people's financial prospects a little bit, and that will make them mad at the Biden administration because of all the spending the Biden administration has been doing to force this interest rate rise to begin with. And like I said, that might be felt a little more than minor inflation that we're going to be seeing this year anyway. Now, I know Mike Johnson isn't thinking that at all. He's probably just a Republican in name only who's caving into the Democrats because that's the thing to do these days if you're a Republican, or it's always been the thing to do, because the Republican Party, you know, ever since the Tea Party movement, has just been basically like they took the momentum from the Tea Party movement and subverted it to just help themselves have as much power as possible without actually having being in a position to do anything about it. You know, that's why I love this example, Obamacare. In 2014, they said, oh, give us the Senate and we'll get rid of Obamacare. We gave them the Senate. Oh, yeah, well, we now have the House and the Senate, but we still can't get rid of Obamacare. So actually, even back in 2010, that's one of the reasons why the Tea Party movement helped sweep the House, because, well, they were mad about Obamacare. So Republicans said, give us the House in 2010. We'll do something to get rid of Obamacare. Then they got the House. Oh, well, we can't do anything with just the House, it turns out. Give us the Senate. Then we'll do something with Obamacare. Okay, gave them the Senate in 2014. Oh, now we still can't do anything. We need the presidency to really do something with Obamacare. And then, much to their horror, they got the presidency. And they still did nothing with Obamacare. Okay, that has been their modus operandi, to make promises that they have no intention of delivering on, so that they can soak up campaign cash, and then by some fluke when they actually do win, they're like, oh, well, guess what? Turns out we were lying this whole time. We actually can't do anything about it. So sorry. Just look at Trump on border security. Trump unilaterally acted on border security. The Republicans refused to do anything. And their constant excuse, whether it was Obamacare or border security, was, oh, we just don't have the votes in the Senate. And then Democrats come in, and they have an evenly split Senate. And they get everything they want done, okay? Now, during the Trump years, Republicans had a majority in the Senate, a clear majority. They refused to use it. Democrats, they have an even split in the Senate. The vice president is the only tiebreaker, and they use that as much as they could. Okay, that's the difference, I guess, between Republicans and Democrats. Republicans will just make promises, never deliver. Democrats will make horrible promises and deliver. We were talking about that in the opening segment, as you might recall, about District Attorney Alvin Bragg, who made horrible promises and then delivered. And Democrat voters were okay with that, because they don't mind an increase in crime and their lives being threatened so long as their political enemies are punished. So this Mike Johnson business, you know, maybe in his own... maybe benefit of the doubt, he has this grand strategy that I mentioned in mind about forcing Democrats to have to own up to interest rate hikes by allowing them to spend as much as they can. Or maybe he's just weak-kneed and caving in with Democrats because he thinks that this is how you make deals, when Democrats never make deals. They never hold up their end of the bargain. Republicans will get nothing and like it, so to speak. They'll get an empty promise, and that's about it. But that, and or maybe he's just on this side of the Democrats. He actually knows that they're lying to them. He doesn't care. He's just helping them get their stuff done as House Speaker. And he knew the Mayorkas impeachment would go nowhere. That's why he was so keen on approving that, because he knew it would get stopped in the Senate. And he could look like he did something when really he didn't. That could be it too. Now, as far as stopping the impeachment in the Senate goes, apparently that overturned over 200 years of precedent. And, you know, Democrats, they're the ones who complain about Republicans overturning precedent. Yet here they are, not even giving a hearing on the impeachment. And as Senator Mike Lee pointed out, actually, we do have that clip. If our producer wouldn't mind playing it, clip number 11, Senator Mike Lee pointing out that we do have legitimate grounds to impeach Mayorkas.
As wrong as the majority leader was in making this particular point of order as to Article 1 of the impeachment articles, Article 1 refers to the willful defiance by Secretary Mayorkas of the law. As wrong as he was in making that as to Article 1, he is even more wrong, far more so, with respect to Article 2, because Article 2 accuses him of knowingly making false statements. This is a violation of 18 U.S.C. Section 1001, a felony offense. If this is not a high crime and misdemeanor, what is? If this is not impeachable, what is? What precedent will be setting? We need to address this and to discuss it. We need to discuss it in closed session. For that reason, Madam President, I move that the Senate proceed to closed session to allow for deliberation on this very consequential point of order that he's just made, that violates hundreds of years of Anglo-American legal precedent and understanding on the question required by impeachment Rule 24.
All right, so there was the Senator Mike Lee, as I described. He mentions that how DHS Secretary Mayorkas actually did kind of violate a high crime there by his false statements. And yet there's the Democrats did not care. You can lie and get away with it if you want to. No problem. Lie to Congress. Go ahead. But again, I've been saying that for a while now. I mean, I criticized Fox News' Brett Baer for thinking that lying to Congress wasn't a thing when he made it at one point. So anyway, we got more Silk or Joe Show after this break where we won't be lying to Congress.
Calling all organizations responsible for implementing all or part of a state's commercial driver's license program and agencies that provide commercial motor vehicle operator safety training. Federal grant funding may be within your reach. I'm Nikki McDavid, Commercial Driver's License Division Chief with the U.S. Department of Transportation's Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, or FMCSA. The CDL program implementation and the CMB Operator Safety Training grant programs help pave the way for safer roadways and a safer transportation environment. Prospective applicants are encouraged to learn more about these funding opportunities at fmcsa.dot.gov/grants. Together, we can prevent crashes, serious injuries, and deaths on our nation's highways. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration.
A new minimally invasive treatment option for prostate cancer shows successful outcomes without the side effects that often come with surgery or radiation. Prostate cancer affects 1 in 8 men in their lifetimes. The success of MRI-guided transurethral ultrasound ablation, TULSA, represents a revolution in whole-gland treatment for prostate cancer. Patients now have an alternative treatment option that has a favorable side effect profile compared to surgery, radiation, and thermal therapy. In the TULSA procedure, a small catheter-like device is inserted through the urethra into the prostate, where the tissue is heated, killing the cancer cells while protecting the sensitive nerves around the prostate. Dr. Stephen S. Raymond, Professor of Radiology, Urology, and Surgery at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA.
This image-guided therapy maximizes our ability to kill cancer cells while minimizing collateral damage to the prostate to achieve the ultimate trifecta in prostate cancer treatment, full local cancer control while maintaining urinary continence and potency.
For more information, go to sirmeeting.org, sponsored by Society of Interventional Radiology.
The results are in. In a nationwide double-blind taste test, Applebee's Classic Buffalo Boneless Wings reign supreme as America's favorite boneless wings. To celebrate, Applebee's is offering boneless wings for 50 cents each for a limited time, available for dine-in, to-go, or delivery. Head to your neighborhood Applebee's or visit applebees.com or mobile app to celebrate with this unbelievable deal. Price, participation, and selection may vary. Now that's eating good in the neighborhood. Sponsored by Applebee's.
John Nichols was making major strides in his career when at age 32, a water skiing accident left him critically injured. Fortunately, he had disability insurance.
For me, disability insurance was the safety net. I did not have to worry about the bills. I did not have the financial concerns.
Thanks to disability insurance that John had through work and on his own, he continued to receive an income until he could return to work. Learn more at protectyourpaycheck.org, a message from the nonprofit Life Foundation.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night, and every moment in between, it really is so special. And boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs, and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all here today. Thank you for sticking with us through this hour of the program. So, New York State, I just heard about this last night. They have this new form for their red flag laws where you can report someone as a potential hazard, either for because they purchased a gun or for buying ammunition for a gun. That apparently is enough to set off a red flag in New York State, which might be an issue to our current guest, Danya Vizzi. She was the 2022 Women's Skeet World Champion and has been winning medals internationally since 2015 and will be competing in the Paris Olympics later this year. Danya, happy to have you on the show. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm doing all right, thank you, because I don't live in New York State, thankfully, but it seems that this red flag law might be a bit of an issue, you know, for competitive shooters, especially, because how are you going to compete unless you do these things that they say are red flags now?
Exactly. It's so sad. Luckily, I live in the free state of Florida, so we don't have any legislature like this, but I know shooters who live in California are already going through, you know, so many restrictions where they can't train properly so that they can compete at the highest level. So now New York is just following suit, and they're going to have the same problems.
Like, especially, you know, not that guns should not be available for the general public, but, you know, these groups that the states that are doing this, they're not really taking into account shooters competing in the Olympics or anything like that. It seems like they're trying to sabotage the sport, even though it's an internationally recognized sport.
Of course, they don't care about the sport. That's why they don't televise us very often. And if they do televise us, it's at 3 o'clock in the morning. So people don't learn about the sport. And I think that's what's so sad is, like, when I even first started shooting, I started with my dad, just kind of something fun to do on the weekends. But I never knew that it was an Olympic sport until I met somebody who told me that. So it's almost like they're trying to suppress the shooting sports. And I believe the shooting sports is one of the greatest sports because it's something that you can do with your family, no matter what age you are. You know, it's something that I could do with my grandfather, that I could teach my grandkids to do. And there's just not many sports where you can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I have a tenant who, he is super shy, and you cannot get him out of the house or around people. He's almost like a cat. But I got him out shooting. And, you know, that was pretty impressive, and it was a great bonding moment, and it was a great way to get him out of the house and actually out in public doing something for once. So it has an ability to reach people, as you were just saying, but all this suppression about it, you know, not acknowledging it as a sport or whatever, and it seems to me that some of this is being done just as a way to keep the fear campaigns going, because the more you see something, the less of a threat that you think it is, especially the more you come to understand it. So, you know, if you see competitive shooters, that might go against the narrative that anyone who has a gun is a psycho.
Of course. And, you know, the more you're around something, the more comfortable you are with it. You know, I go to a gun range now, and I've never had a fear when I've walked into a gun range, and I don't think any American should. And I think it's just something that we should learn when we're young adults, how to use a firearm properly, how to use one safely, and, of course, how to carry one, especially as a woman.
Yeah, because it's a great self-defense tool. And that's another thing, too. You know, people say, oh, you just buy it because you're insane, or what do you have to worry about that you would need a firearm? There's no reason in the world to have a firearm. And, you know, some arguments from people on the left are just go outright. Why would you kill somebody for anything, any reason? And it's like that there are actually plenty of reasons. You know, we're not at the freaking Star Trek level with stun guns or whatever. We have to go with what we have to stop people.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the Second Amendment was made for. You know, as much as I love to say that the Second Amendment is about the shooting sports or about waterfowl hunting, it was really made for defending the nation against enemies, foreign and domestic, and for also for citizens to be able to defend themselves in their own homes.
Mm-hmm. And that's another thing, too, this false argument about the limits on the Second Amendment. You had Joe Biden the other day talk about how when he was a law professor, he taught the Second Amendment never mentioned cannons. It wasn't about having cannons or whatever, and it prevented you from owning cannons. That was a limit that he said. Well, first of all, he never taught law. But second of all, the Second Amendment, there was never an argument that cannons were excluded from it. They meant any weapon.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, they're trying to push universal background checks, which is insane to me. And people don't realize that universal background checks, you know, it sounds great. Why shouldn't we do a background check on somebody who wants to purchase a firearm, which I understand. But, you know, universal background checks will criminalize transfers between family members. It wouldn't allow me to take, you know, my mom out to shoot. Like, she wouldn't be able to shoot my gun. And that's just common and innocent firearm conduct that they're trying to make illegal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they keep talking about stuff like the gun show loophole. I don't know what the heck gun shows they go to, but anytime I've ever bought a firearm at a gun show, there were background checks. You could always see background checks.
100%. 100%.
Yeah, and I guess that's part of, again, why they like to hide things like the shooting sports, because it's just the misinformation is allowed to flourish in absence of anything else. And, you know, I'm just thinking, hot on my mind is a few weeks ago, some gentleman decided to have pistols at dawn outside my house, so a bullet got lodged in my window frame. And,
you know,
I know someone who was afraid that the bullet would explode, because that's just how lacking the understanding of firearms was, that the actual lead projectile would blow up in my window frame, even though there was no explosive component at that point. And it's like, people, when you're not exposed to this stuff, you get ideas like that in your head, which helps with the fear-mongering campaigns.
Exactly. And I just think if everybody was taught, you know, even a little bit about firearms and, you know, all of the great things that come with owning a firearm, I just think, you know, it would change a lot of people's minds. But they see all of this on the news and they just think negatively, but they never show the positive. It's like anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there was a study done, it was like 1989, the Violence Policy Institute, I think is what group was called. And they came out with a study, like the reason why they focused on assault weapons is because they're not, you know, hunting rifles, they're still relatively new, they'd only been out for about 20 years by then. So, and they looked scary because they looked like military weapons. So they figured we do the fear campaign on these, and it could be sort of getting our foot in the door for further gun control. And then that's, you know, part of the argument that you keep hearing about the assault weapons bans. We want to ban assault weapons because, not because law-abiding people are going to misuse them, but because it just lessens the amount that criminals can steal or whatever. But then by that logic, that means you're going to ban all firearms eventually. Otherwise, criminals will just get a hold of some other different type of firearm.
Oh, 100%. And then if it's not a firearm, it's something else. You know, you see all the time people are driving their cars into crowds. Are we going to ban cars? What about knives? I mean, are we going to ban all knives? It's just, they're just trying to take away from us law-abiding citizens, and it's not right.
Right.
That's the only way we have to defend ourselves, and the only way to fight a gun is with a gun. So
exactly.
You can't take it away from your law-abiding citizens.
Exactly. Well, Danya Vizzi, appreciate you being on the show to talk about this, and good luck to you at the Olympics. Hope you come in with the gold. And listeners, thank you for tuning into the show today. Don't forget to catch the Paris Olympics, at least the shooting event, so you can see Danya Vizzi compete. And our show is at MainStreetRadioNetwork.com and our social media, GetterGETTR.com at Silker Joe Show. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.